Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Well, let's call it a 911 health alert because there is an uptick in synthetic marijuana drug overdoses in the Washington, D.C. area. Why is this happening and what's being done about it? That's part of our conversation tonight, and we want you to join in. The phone lines are open. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Synthetic marijuana drug use in the Washington, D.C. area. What is going on with it? Why is it happening? And again, what's being done to curb the overdoses that have taken over the area, and specifically Washington, D.C., within the last several weeks? Joining us in studio to talk about this issue is Dr. Tanya Royster, Director of the District's Department of Behavioral Health, and Ralph Williams, Coalition Coordinator for Promise Neighborhood Drug-Free Communities in Prince George's County. Again, the phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'd like to hear from you. Dr. Royster, let's start off, first of all, with synthetic marijuana. It had several names, K2, Spice, probably a couple others that I'm not throwing out there. For those who don't know what synthetic marijuana is, what is it?
So, first of all, synthetic marijuana, I have started to help people understand that that is a misnomer. So it is not marijuana at all. It belongs to a group of chemicals called synthetic cannabinoids. And that cannabinoid chemical structure is distantly related to marijuana, which is why I think we got the name that has stuck. But that has led many people to believe that this has similar effects, and we know that it does not. Also, synthetic cannabinoids is a series of compounds. There have been well over 200 identified by federal and local governments around the country. And they are made in people's garages, in China, and shipped over here. And they have very devastating effects on the body.
Ralph Williams, within the last week or so, 4 deaths in D.C. from overdoses from K2, about 300 people did not die but have overdosed from it just in the area and specifically in D.C. What is going on with this? Why is this uptick? Is there something specific that's happening? Is it the summertime? Is it cheap? What's your thoughts there?
Thanks, Vermont. I appreciate that. It's actually a combination of all those things. It's not that expensive, and like we were talking about in the green room, it's a product that is not, again, like Dr. Royster said, is not actually a marijuana. It's not typical marijuana users do not use it. This is a hardcore drug that has extremely adverse effects, and it's sometimes a substitute for other hardcore drugs like LSD, heroin, and things like that. So it's a problem in of itself, and that we're seeing nationwide.
Do folks prefer that drug over another drug? Is it something about that drug, or is it literally a monetary issue?
I think it's a combination of factors. We find that K2 or synthetic cannabinoid users often are substituting. They may be a heroin user, a PCP user, and they don't have enough money. And so this is a very cheap, easy, quick high, but it's also very short-lived. The other reason that we're confident we've identified there's a new strain that is recently introduced, and that's why there's been such a huge uptick in this last 10 days.
And we know in D.C. in 2016, I think there were about like 600 overdose victims, and the fact that we've had like 300 just here recently and what's happening in Prince George's County. We're talking specifically about D.C. here, Ralph, but what's happening in Prince George's County? Are we seeing the same type of thing in the county?
We're seeing similar results. My last update from that has... I haven't got anything as far as like an uptick as far as that's concerned. But at the same time, you know, Prince George's County borders right on D.C. and particularly areas like Glass Manor and other border areas are really affected by the same things that the district are. I would hasten to not mention that in Baltimore recently they had a series of incidents where people were really ill because the K2 was laced with rat poisoning. So, I mean, again, like...
And why is that? Was that to target someone, or is it cheap, or does it mimic something, or is it just a chemical?
Right, so it's oftentimes, when people are purchasing K2, as I said, it's a series and a multitude of agents. And so what we find in D.C., we have a collaboration, and many government agencies are involved in approaching this challenge from all different angles. What we find is when our Department of Forensic Services test a pack that they recover on the street, it may have 6 or 7 different compounds in it. So a person may think that they're purchasing, you know, K2 or Scooby or all of one of this, but it might have 4, 5, 6 different things in them. Some of it may be the synthetic cannabinoid. Some of it could be, it's been amazing how many things you can find in one pack. So people just have no idea what they're actually putting into their bodies.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tonight we're talking about the uptick of the use of K2, a synthetic drug. It is not marijuana. It may sort of mimic some aspects of marijuana, but as our experts are telling us, it is not. And so if you think that it is, tonight you're finding out that it is not and the dangers of it. Ralph, what are communities, what can communities do, whether it's law enforcement, whether it's substance abuse programs, what can they do sort of to combat this issue, again, that we're seeing a rise in here of late?
That's a good question. I think people, the biggest thing is like discussions like this, where we're actually giving some information and sharing so that people can be more cognizant of some of the dangers that are out there. I think, again, with the first and biggest misnomer of it being marijuana. So that's the first thing. So, and marijuana is considered, quote unquote, safe.
Mm-hmm.
So now that we've gotten that out of the way and people can realize that it's not safe at all, now you can start having discussions about how we can be aware of what are some of the symptoms. Well, not symptoms, I'm sorry. Some of the signs that someone in your family or loved one might be using. Other things as far as what the actual quote-unquote hustle of that particular drug is, because it actually is a different hustle than other drugs too. All those different things that we talk about, and not be scared to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, be open to talk about it at church. Be open to talk about it at the family reunion. I mean, it's that time of year, so.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Royster, you wanted to make a point?
Yeah, I was just going to add that, you know, I'm sure that other jurisdictions are doing what Mayor Bowser has instructed us to do, which is work together across different sectors. So we have health agencies involved. We have human service agencies involved, because this spike here in D.C. hit during a heat wave, which made it even more dangerous. So we had human service agencies distributing water. We had education and awareness to vulnerable populations. We have the police doing their job around illicit drugs. And we're most importantly trying to make people aware that treatment is available and to get help.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tonight we're talking about a very important issue, the K2 drug use in the communities in our area and the uptick in that, and what our communities can do about that and what you can learn about the drug and the dangers of it. 202-319-7810. Let's go to the phone lines. Denise is calling from the district. Go right ahead, Denise.
Yes, hello?
Hello.
Hi. I was trying to follow up on your question when you asked about the fact that they cut the drug with substances such as rat poisoning.
Mm-hmm.
And I understood her answer to be that people don't know what they're really getting. But I was wondering, why would people cut the drugs with rat poisoning? Is it just in order to expand the volume of what they have? Or do you think some people are maliciously trying to hurt people?
I'm going to let Ralph address that. Great question, Denise.
Yes, that's a great question. Typically, that is the case. It's usually a matter of, okay, we ran out of the supply and demand. The demand is high. We ran out of supply. How can we stretch it out? You really don't care about your customer base in these types of instances. So you try to stretch it with whatever that can actually be laced in there to expand the product, or what some may consider, lengthen or enhance the high on some falsehood.
Dr. Tanya Royster, Director of D.C.'s Department of Behavioral Health, and Ralph Williams, Coalition Coordinator for Promise Neighborhood Drug-Free Communities in Prince George's County, our guest tonight again. And we are talking about the K2 drug and its effects on the community and what can be done about it. Dr. Royster, Ralph had mentioned earlier that, we should be talking to family members. If you see signs that mm-hmm. the family members may be on this drug, what signs should family members look for? Is there anything specific that mimics that a person is using the K2 drug?
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things that makes it so difficult to explain this family of drugs to people in general, because depending on what's in the batch that you get is the symptoms that you will present. So a couple of years ago, we saw people that were slowing their breathing and passing out, and that's where our K2 zombie campaign came from, because people were laid out on the street for hours because they had smoked this. This recent batch, people are agitated and delirious and having trouble with hallucinations, and sometimes can even be aggressive, but it's a very quick and brief thing. And 20, 30 minutes later, they're up walking around and asking for some more. So whatever is in that package will determine what part of the body is affected and what part of the brain is affected. But anything that looks outside the person's normal behavior, we have to be willing and able to ask difficult questions to the people we love.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Let's go back to the phone lines. Let's go to April calling from Virginia. Go right ahead, April. I think we've lost April. Let's go to Marcus calling from D.C. Go right ahead, Marcus. Marcus.
Oh, me again?
Yes, you're up.
Okay. So, okay, I thought I was on earlier. But anyway, my perception of this is that growing up in D.C. all my life, there are times and there were always spots where people could get quality weed. It wasn't legal, but, you know, they could get it from a hustler on the street. Quality weed. The elimination of street hustlers, period, is why and is the spike of this K2. Mm-hmm. Not just that, if you take Montgomery County, if you take Arlington, if you take the counties in Maryland and Virginia who are people are addicted to Percocets and Xanax, that's because they don't have brothers on the corner selling you some bomb ass weed. And even you take all the brothers up Saratoga, Montana got locked up, all the brothers on Kennedy Street got locked up for selling what? Weed. They ain't selling heroin crack. They selling weed, and they're all in jail and got locked up.
Well, let me let the guests jump into that, Marcus, before we have to sort of jump over to the other side and take a break. Now, he brings up an interesting angle. He is saying because folks have to go somewhere else from those trusted drug dealers, this is contributing to this issue of people overdosing, getting bad stuff, getting stuff laced with rat poison. Ralph, what's your take on Marcus's point?
I'm going to try to put in words that I'm sure Marcus will understand or appreciate. The hustle has changed, and so has the game. So to put in a more of a basic scenario, the economics have changed. So now, because of the legalization, the hustle is different. The cats who are out there doing their thing have to do, unfortunately, use adverse ways of doing. And, of course, I don't know if Mark wants to admit it, but there actually was a problem back in those same days as far as the other hardcore drugs, as far as how they were laced.
So Marcus has a point, I think, here, maybe from an economic point of view, what that means in the shift there. So we can get a little bit more into that. Thank you so much, Marcus, for your call. Tonight we are talking about the K2 and the uptick in the use of this synthetic drug in our region and what it has meant for the area and what can be done about it and the programs out there to help folks who may be hooked on this. So 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We want to hear from you. If you're on the line, stay right there. John, welcome back to the Daily Drum on HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Tonight, we are talking about the drug called K2, called Spice. It is not a synthetic marijuana, but it is a synthetic drug that is dangerous. We have seen an uptick in the area in the use of it. Is it because of summertime? D.C. paramedics, D.C. officials in Prince George's County are treating more and more of those who are overdosing on this K2 drug. And tonight we're talking about why that's happening and what can be done to combat it. Dr. Tanya Royster is director of D.C.'s Department of Behavioral Health, and Ralph Williams is the coalition coordinator for Promise Neighborhood Drug-Free Communities in Prince George's County. The phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Royster, Marcus brought up the point. He said, you know, you don't have the guys on the corner now who are selling good weed, and so you have sort of this kind of stuff, this bad stuff that is out there. My question to you is this K2 drug more used more prominently in certain communities than others?
Absolutely. And also the demographics have changed over time. When we first started looking at this a few years ago, young people were very vulnerable. But I think the reason was the same, because it is so very cheap, easy to access, sold in small quantities, oftentimes like a single cigarette. And so in the district, we had a campaign to make young people aware of the dangers of this drug, and we saw a substantial decrease, and young people aren't using it. But then we saw men 18 to 35, oftentimes homeless, which again would speak to the cheap availability of the drug. You could conceal it easily. Mm-hmm. Many people originally believed, because the compound is so diverse, that it could not be found and picked up in urine screens or drug toxicology tests. But now the entire country is much more sophisticated at that, so we can pick it up in all of those ways. But all of those kind of things made their way around the street, and there were certain populations that I think became more vulnerable to using this drug.
And you made the point of homeless shelters. I know in D.C. a lot of that uptick of overdoses took place
around
homeless
mm-hmm.
shelters. Why is that?
Well, I think that that's sometimes where people congregate when they know a vulnerable population who doesn't have a lot of money. You can prey on them in that area. We are seeing some dispersion now into other parts of the city, which suggests that either that market is tapped out, we're getting the word out, and we just have to keep spreading it so that other communities don't fall prey.
Ralph, you wanted to follow up on that?
Mm-hmm. I just want to say that in reference to Prince George's County, we have the same instance, whereas, you know, Prince George's County is urban suburban, but we do have those same populations that are home of homelessness, of various types of substance abuses, where there's different levels of congregation where these things and these activities are done as well. So
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tonight, our conversation centering around the K2 drug, the cannabinoid. Am I pronouncing that right?
Cannabinoids.
Cannabinoids, yeah. Dr. Royster. Not a synthetic marijuana, but cannabinoids.
Mm-hmm.
Did I get all of those syllables in there?
Got
it that time. All right, let's go back to the phone lines. And John calling from D.C. Go right ahead, John.
Today?
Yes, go right ahead.
I live in D.C. I was around when it first came out, when they was talking about legalizing weed.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an opportunity that they could push the synthetic drugs through gas station and liquor stores.
Mm-hmm.
Because at one point in time, people was buying it from the gas station and liquor stores. And I used to tell people that's all that is potpourri, because that's what it looked like.
Mm-hmm.
But so now it seems like, well, now they legalize weed. Now the K2 or whatever you want to call it is now the end thing to do, because it's cheap.
Well,
they cannot get, you know, now that they're not doing drug tests for K2, it's something that they say we could do and we can't get caught up and we could get a job.
Let me let the panel address that. Is John onto something? Can K2, is it hard to trace? Do some folks use that instead of other drugs?
Used to be. Now the drug testing is a lot more sophisticated. You can have the screenings for K2. Those are through urine tests as well, right?
Yes, absolutely. But John is right about the distribution. Originally, because it was sold in little packets that looked like little cartoon characters or little animated objects, mm-hmm. they were sold behind the counter, like where you might see cigarettes in a gas station or a convenience store, which clearly is targeting a certain demographic. And again, Mayor Bowser supported us in creating an initiative where we started raiding, and the people were vendors were at risk of losing their business licenses. And so we have substantially decreased the amount that's sold in convenience stores and liquor stores and other corner stores like that in the community. But now we're seeing people go straight to the consumer on the street in these little packages of cigarettes and self-rolled items.
I think that was my next question for you, Ralph. Number one, have we seen a reduction of stores mm-hmm. Selling this? And two, who is selling it on the street? Is there a prototypical sort of person who's selling it, or is it just anybody you may not recognize?
That's a good question. I think it's your typical I'll be honest and transparent. The drug dealers I know of, they'll sell whatever is hot. Mm-hmm. It's not even going to be about I'll only sell this, only sell that. They're going to sell what's hot. So if K2 spice, cannabinoids are what's popping on the street, that's what's going to be sold. Period. Mm-hmm. And if you could repeat the first part of your question,
The first part I asked was, I said who? Oh, the stores that been selling it. Has there been a solid crackdown on that in Prince George's County?
Yes. That has been a crackdown as soon as the state made it illegal a few years ago. It was a serious crackdown. But of course, like all different types of dark economy, they call it de-economies. What happens, somebody will come to the store owner and say, look, I can buy that whole thing up for you. You don't have to sell it over the counter. I'll take it off your hands. He's going to take that money, you know, especially if it's cash, and get rid of it so he don't have to sell it in his store. But that hustler will take that and make the profit off of that on the street.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tonight we're talking about the synthetic drug, also known prominently as spice, and what it is doing to the community, what can be done to combat it, and the uptick that we are seeing specifically in the district and in Prince George's County, but really in the District of Columbia here over the last several weeks, four deaths within the last week and a half in the district. The phone lines are open, 202-319-7810. Let's go back to those phone lines, and Derek is calling from the district. Go right ahead, Derek.
Yes, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing fine. I remember when the K2 first hit the scene, they called it PO pack because they couldn't find it in the urine and things of that nature. And so guys who was on papers and things of that nature would use it to substitute the drugs that they can detect. Now, after they caught up with that and started testing for that, you know, guys, they just kept moving on to different chemicals, putting in different chemicals to try to be ahead of the police.
Mm-hmm.
You know, start putting in different substances so they can get around the stuff being detected.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I remember when it really first hit the scene out in Virginia, and the little guy jumped off a balcony and killed himself, and they instantly got it out of that community. And that's when you've seen the uprise of it in the urban community in Washington, D.C.
Hmm. Let me pick up on that, if I can, Derek, with Dr. Royster. Dr. Royster, is this, quote-unquote, an urban drug?
No, I mean, this drug can be manufactured anywhere. And remember, it's a evolving compound, right? So the drug from 5 years ago is not the same K2 you're going to find on the street today, although we keep calling it the same name. But it's really a whole series of things that evolve over time, and everyone is vulnerable.
When I say, is it an urban drug, meaning is it a drug that's more affiliated with communities of color? Because we know the issue now that opioids is taking on a national push, and many would argue that that's becoming a larger issue because it's affecting communities outside of communities of color, and now it's come into the police station, and we won't arrest you, but we'll get you into treatment. So I guess what I'm trying to figure out is, how is K2 viewed out in the larger society? Is it seen as a urban drug that people of color are using, or, you know?
I think it has evolved over time. There were pockets and periods of time where it was not particularly urban, and now it is particularly urban. And I'm not certain why it's flowing through different populations, if it is what happens to be hot on the street right now, where it was manufactured, how it made its way into the market. There could be so many factors about who gets introduced to what strain. But it really has varied over time who has been the most affected.
Ralph.
Yeah, I think I have to agree with Dr. Royster on that. I think one thing has to do with, again, proximity and accessibility. The fact that, like Dr. Royster mentioned earlier, this comes, usually from foreign countries, particularly China. So you got your ports here on the East Coast. What are the closest cities to the East Coast? Miami, D.C., New York, Philly. So all those places have the higher proximity to the drug in the first place. So it doesn't necessarily have to go any further out into the Midwest because it's used to get all your sales right here.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Our topic tonight, the K2 synthetic drug. Our guest, the experts, Tanya Royster, director of D.C.'s Department of Behavioral Health and a doctor, of course, and Ralph Williams, coalition coordinator for Promise Neighborhood Drug-Free Communities. And you, the phone lines are open, 202-319-7810. We'd like to hear from you. Let's go back to those phone lines and Slim calling from Washington, D.C.
Yeah. Y'all say the synthetic drug was there, whatever. But how does it get in here? Who owns these places that it's being sold to? Gas stations, convenience stores, who owns these places? Don't nobody crack down, don't nobody go in there and see or do anything about nothing. Y'all just trying to help the problem more than it seems to me. Everybody know people of color like marijuana, so they came up with that synthetic drug to alleviate the people of color. Think about it.
So I think
some common sense.
I think what Slim is getting at, it sounds like, if I can kind of sort of condense, I think he's viewing this thing as sort of a conspiracy kind of thing. I think he makes a broad sort of assertion that everybody knows black folks love marijuana. I think that could be an argument. There are a lot of people outside of the African-American community who love marijuana. But, you know, Dr. Royster, still, just to give, you know, his comments some voice, there is a sense that, you know, when drugs come into the black community, oftentimes they are put there not necessarily by African Americans, but by larger forces. Mm-hmm. Is that a challenge that the district has to face, or do you have a whole different kind of approach to what's going on, or do you have to sort of see that and figure out, okay, how do we deal with that?
No, well, you absolutely have to see that because that's a part of the community's perception and belief system. And if you don't meet the community where they are, you can't offer any solutions that are meaningful. And so if we tried to pretend like that's not the way that some people feel, then we wouldn't be engaged as real partners and real dialogue, and then we wouldn't be able to offer people help and support. So there absolutely have been times in history, some very remote and some less remote, where African Americans have been targeted in healthcare. That's a reality of the world and our history as a country that we have to acknowledge. Does that mean that everything that happens is a result of that? Absolutely not. And so we as a community have to figure out, how do we accept help? How do we get help? And how do we move on and help the people we care about?
Dr. Royster, Ralph mentions help. How do we get help? I'm going to give you sort of a two-pronged question. Number one, with your organization, how do you work with law enforcement that they can help you and you can help them? So I'll start with that part of the
question.
Sure.
My coalition consists of different sectors around the community, which includes law enforcement. So the law enforcement is actively, Prince George's County law enforcement is actively involved in trying to alleviate the problem of cannabinoids in our community, as well as some of the other disparities that affect particularly our younger people and our disenfranchised. So the first part is, of course, like we talked before, about awareness, knowing what's going on in the community. And you know, to address the previous caller's, Slim's question, like, say something. You know, say something to the police. Say something to, if the police don't do anything about it, write your council person. Make them accountable. Say, hey, I vote for you in a couple years. Remember that I'm asking you to help alleviate this problem that we have in the community. So we have to get active as well, because sometimes our voices are ignored. Let's keep it real. But at the same time, the louder we are and the smarter we are, the more effective we are.
Use democracy to your advantage.
Yes.
Right? 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are going to continue this conversation. The phone lines are still open. We'd like to hear from you. You've got two experts here in the studio that can help guide you in terms of information, in terms of services, which we'll talk about when we come back as we continue our conversation about the K2 drug, what it means in our community, and what can be due to combat its use. The Daily Drum will continue right after this break. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Tonight, we were calling it somewhat a 911 health alert because there's an uptick in synthetic drug use, K2, overdoses in Washington, D.C., in the area. We're talking about why this is happening, what can be done about it, the treatment that is out there available for those who are hooked on this K2 synthetic drug. With us tonight to talk about this issue is Dr. Tanya Royster, Director of D.C.'s Department of Behavioral Health, and Ralph Williams, Coalition Coordinator for Promise Neighborhood Drug-Free Communities in Prince George's County, Maryland. Phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go back to those phone lines, and Sharon calling from Waldorf.
Hi. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. I have a niece who was hospitalized a few years ago for using K2. And as a result of her usage, she had hallucinations, et cetera, where she tried to jump out of a car. Mm-hmm. So since then, she's got to take shots for the rest of her life. Can you expound on those shots that she has to take for the rest of her life?
Certainly, I don't know your niece's specific situation, but depending on what part of the brain was affected, it sounds like she had hallucinations that did not resolve acutely, and that is one of the dangers, that this damage can be permanent. And people who have hallucinations oftentimes will take a type of medicine called antipsychotics, and that can be an oral form as a pill, or it can be an injection that's given once a month or once every 2 weeks to try to rebalance the brain's chemicals and help the person be without those hallucinations. So my guess, without knowing your niece's specific situation, is that she's probably on what we call a long-acting injectable antipsychotic.
And is that something that she may have to be on for the rest of her life, yes, or it depends on the person?
It depends on the person. And, you know, you don't know if she had an underlying kind of predisposition for a psychiatric illness, and the drug kind of catapulted her over into an acute phase very precipitously, or if it was brain damage. But there are, you know, many people who take them for life.
And has there been a diagnosis of your niece beyond maybe some other underlying issues that may have been taking place with her physically?
But another concern I have is her childbearing years. Will this affect any children she might have?
So there are certain antipsychotics that are more safe than others, and hopefully she'll work with her doctor. It's one of the biggest mistakes that women can make, is to try to make that decision on their own. When she's ready to have children, I would strongly suggest that she have a frank conversation with her doctor about the risk. Should she get off the medicine before? Should she wait? There are certain medicines that are safe to take during pregnancy, so they may make a choice to put her on a different medicine. But that's all on an individual basis that she should really discuss with her physician in advance of having children.
Okay. All right. But thank you so much.
And thank you so much for your call. And she brought up an interesting topic that I did want to get to. If there was a difference, a gender difference in terms of the use of the drug, do we see a scale where it's up and low depending on, because Dr. Royster, you make a very important point about, you know, what this can mean for reproduction, mm-hmm, for women. I don't know if it means anything for men and using this type of drug. So sort of the long-lasting physical things that can happen from using K2.
Yeah, well, you know, you'll make me put on my doctor hat.
But,
you know,
got men, that title.
Yes. Men and women certainly have different physiology when it comes to reproduction. And a man's reproductive organs are regenerative, right? And so every 64 days, he's got a fresh batch, mm-hmm, right? Whereas a woman is born with those eggs, and she carries them throughout her life. So everything she does to her body throughout the course of her life has the ability to impact those eggs. And so that's why what's unfortunate for this young woman is you really don't know. And we know that these things can change your DNA, which then can affect future generations.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You are getting important medical information. You're going to get information, and you have gotten information about what can be done in terms of helping you to get treatment, what law enforcement is doing, and even what some of the activities that are happening out there for groups and organizations who are working to combat the use of K2 in our communities. And Ralph, I go to you there, Ralph Wilson Williams, rather, Coalition Coordinator for Promise Neighborhood Drug Free Communities in Prince George's County. Speak to that a bit, some of those things that are going on out there in the community that folks may not know are even happening.
Correct. And yeah, there is some good news out there for Monte. Our coalition works actively in both the southern part of the county and the northern part of the county. So shout outs to both our strong partners in the town of Colmore Manor, as well as United Methodist Church of Oxon Hill, who are both strong partners as far as hosting a lot of our events for the youth, as well as just being out there and being cognizant in the community about it. I just came back from a national conference that addressed some of these issues, not specifically cannabinoids itself, but some of the other drug issues that are going on with in the entire nation. Of course, the opioid stuff that we mentioned. At the same time, what's very empowering and very exciting is the fact that a lot of young people, there are about almost 600 youth from across the country who are diligently working towards alleviating those issues in their particular communities. Met with some youth from Detroit. I had some of our youth with us. So it doesn't matter, Minnesota, all over the country. So the young people out there are doing their thing, and they're addressing it in a way that we might come from an academic perspective or theoretical perspective, but they come from the actual hallways of the school. Mm-hmm. They come from the basketball court or the woods out wherever. So they know a little bit how to shape those messages, and they are out there helping us do that.
And Dr. Royster, part of that help too, I would think, from your standpoint and from social services standpoint, is treatment, mm-hmm. trying to get folks into treatment. So for our listeners out there, for those who may be suffering, for those who have family members, mm-hmm. and they're trying to figure out, how can I help get them help? You know, what should they be doing? Where should they be looking?
Well, we're fortunate in the District of Columbia. We have one centralized number that people can call. It's 888-7-WE-HELP. And with that number, it's at the D.C. Department of Behavioral Health, 24/7, 365. There are live counselors and clinicians who can help understand what you're trying to search for, whether it's for yourself, a child, a young adult, or a family member, and help you connect to the right services. We also can tell you about outreach events. We have four prevention centers in the district that use very much the approach that Ralph talked about, getting young people informed and to have community conversations and spread the word in their own language to other young people about the importance of avoiding these drugs. We also use people with lived experience. So people who have survived and are in recovery, we call them recovery coaches. And they have been through stringent training to be able to work with others and bring them along the same road that they have taken. Our goal is to save lives, right? And as much as we want you to get in treatment, we can't get you in treatment if you're dead. And so first we want to save your life, and then we want to get you in the right kind of treatment. So if you call that number, 888-7-WE-HELP, we will connect you or help you figure out how to talk to your loved one. We'll send someone to your house if they won't come in. We'll do whatever it takes to save a life.
And this is strictly for district residents,
correct?
This is
for district residents,
and
yes.
For those in Prince George's County, Ralph, are there programs? Is there a place they can go, a website they should be going to just sort of seek information for help?
Well, they can come to our website, which is www.awpismpaulli.org, and just click on the icon that says Promised Neighborhoods. But at the same time, we can have listeners call in to our producer and get the numbers from the actual county that can pinpoint them to immediate treatment.
We just have a few moments left, and before we leave, I did want to ask, because we've seen this great uptick here within the last couple of weeks, and we've seen it during these hot summertime months. Why do we see that in the summertime? Is it specific to a season where you see more use, more overdoses?
It can be seasonal because people are outside more. Like we definitely see a little bit of a downturn in the winter months, because when it's 10 degrees outside and 20 degrees outside, people aren't hanging out on the street corner as much. They still may come out and get their drugs, but they're going to go back inside. Mm-hmm. Whereas here, people may congregate, they may share, and so you may have a much larger impact with a small batch.
Would you say the same in Prince George's County, Ralph?
I'd have to mirror those comments. Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. You may have hit this, but give me the greatest challenge that you face in combating this drug and the use of this drug by those who are out there? What's the greatest challenge that you find?
I think the greatest challenge is the fact that it's, for lack of better words, a blockchain type type of drug, whereas the composition of it or the chemical balance of it can change at any time. Mm-hmm. As soon as the DEA finds a strand that they find on the street that get rid of it, there's a new one out, and it's always a change of a hydrogen atom or a carbon atom, and then it's a whole different drug.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Royster?
Absolutely. And then also, as we talked about earlier, it being so cheap. And it looks like, you know, anything like potpourri, or it's hard to know that you're getting something really bad.
Well, we appreciate all that you both are doing to combat something that is definitely a scourge on our communities. But it seems like at least with you all in front of this, we're heading in the right direction to do the best we can to slow its effects. Dr. Tanya Royster, she's director of D.C.'s Department of Behavioral Health, and Ralph Williams, coalition coordinator for Promise Neighborhood Drug-Free Communities in Prince George's County. We thank both of you for help guiding us in this conversation and your excellent information. And we thank all of our callers who have called in tonight. That's the Daily Drum on HUR Voice at Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Tuesday, July 24th. I'm Bramante Bryant, and for Harold Fisher, up next, The Connection with Lorna Newton. Have a great night.